bonus. Hi, it's Maz here. Everyone's just been super busy lately. It's taken a while to get stuff done. And I thought, why don't I fucking have a look at the book that I've got off eBay, and maybe I'll have a chat and have a read of some of this Round the Twist book. And the front cover's got drawings of all these people on it. So I can see Linda with her big nose from Gumleaf War. There's the baby with her from Cabbage Patch Fib. There appears to be the maybe Madam Fortune, I don't know, next to them. And Nell on the other side of Linda with her flower hat. And there's a couple of frogs, and the dragon and Santa Claus and Scarecrow, and I'm gonna assume it's the guy from A Good Tip for Ghosts, the ghost, Old Man Chompers. And they're all watching telly with a still of the Twist family on it. It's a nice old telly with a big remote. That must be the remote from bloody Spaghetti Pig Out, what do you reckon?
Yeah.
All right, so the blurb. How do you make a cane toad eat a frog? What happens when Linda copies herself? How do kids get parts in TV shows? What does Rabbit do when he is put on Fast Forward? I think we know that. What does it feel like to kiss another teenage actor? Probably feels gross and scary. Did Pete uneat his meal? How do you write a script? The answers to these questions will send you Round the Twist. Oh, that's the name of the show. Three short stories and the lowdown from Paul Jennings himself on how the television series was made. Fact, fiction, and fun from the fantastic pen of this best-selling author. Party fucking da. Oh, cover illustration by Keith McEwen. Where you fucking go. Thank you. All right, let's open the book. Ooh, sniff it. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, the inside you've got. Writing a TV series was not what I expected. Between first draft and last gasp, there were actors, ghosts, sets, rubbish dumps, and vomited spaghetti. Here is the story of the show and three weird episodes as well. All right, jeez. First published by Penguin Books, Australia, 1990. Would have been three when this book was done. For Julie, who thought of the book. Well done, Julie. Good on ya. Okay, so Danish pastry. What is this? It's all in italics. You know what it's like. You stand on the end of the diving board and you look down and you're too scared to jump. The kids are jostling up the ladder behind you. You can't get back. What am I doing here? You say to yourself. You idiot. You jump. Now it's too late. Nothing can get you back up. You hurtle down towards the water. That's what I felt like when I was going to write the scripts for a television show based on my short stories. That's what I felt like as I sat and waited for him to come, a man called Esben Storm, the director of most of the episodes and the person who was going to show me how to write scripts. I looked at his photo. There was a blob on his left ear. Was it an earring? Would I like him? Would he like me? What did I let myself in for? And what sort of name was Esben anyway? People in movies are a bit on the wild side, aren't they? I waited and worried. A car door slammed. I looked out the window. A man in a leather jacket was walking down the drive. This was it. I had jumped off the diving board. I couldn't go back now. I spent the next 2 years working with Esben, writing and making the TV show Round the Twist. Every script consultation day, Esben would lie back on my lounge and I would sit at the desk writing. We invented characters and places. We wrote new endings for stories. We laughed and worried and argued. Esben would take my scripts away and edit them. Then he would bring them back. If he didn't like them, it was bad news. I had to start all over again. Some mornings when he arrived, he would bring a Danish pastry for morning tea. Fuck yeah! I finally realised why. When it was bad news and the script wasn't good enough, he brought a Danish pastry to soften me up. The worse the news, the bigger the pastry. Hey, Danish pastry, fuck. I began to look out of the window when he pulled up in the car. How I hated the Danish pastry days. Well, now the series is in the can, finished. Maybe you've seen it on TV. Maybe. There are four stories here for you to read. Second Coffee is a brand new yarn inspired by one of my published short stories. Lucky Lips is a retelling of an earlier story, but it has a different ending. Spaghetti Pig Hour is also a story from one of my books, retold for television with a few different twists. The fourth story is the longest. I think I should call it Danish Pastry. It is the story of the writing of the scripts and the making of the television show. It runs right through the book. I hope you like it. Oh, well, I mean, yeah, that's pretty fucked. I don't want Danish pastries to be one with bad news. Like, I love Danish pastries. Doing Esmond. First things first. The first thing you want is a story, right? Okay, well, here it is. On the opposite page is a story called Second Copy. You can start it right now if you want. Oh, maybe I won't then. The left pages all have pictures and bits and pieces about the television show, which you can read as you go or skip and come back to later. That's a lot of effort. There is information about the kids in the show and how they came to be actors. I also show you parts of the various stages of my scripts and tell how I wrote them. Maybe I shouldn't read this one because the copy is bloody... We're not up to there yet. Maybe I'll just read the bit that aren't the stories for now.
What do you reckon? What do you reckon, microphone?
Yeah, I don't think I'll read that one because I don't want to have to go through any spoilers for the Americans because they have not watched a lot of these things. But I will read some of these bits on the left page. All right, the setting. When I started to write Round the Twist, I had to think of a setting. Somewhere for the family to live. I wanted somewhere unusual. In the end, I thought of a lighthouse. It would be terrific to live in a lighthouse. Well, duh. I rang up the big bosses, Dr. Patricia Edgar and Antonia Barnard. They told me they would think about it. Making the interior, the inside set, would be very expensive. I visited a couple of lighthouses to see what they are like inside. A lighthouse keeper told me that there are only two lighthouses in the world where the keepers have lived inside. One is in South Australia and the other is in Scotland. In the end, the phone call came back. Yes, you can have a lighthouse. I was rapt. The inside set was made in the studio in Port Melbourne. The outside of the real lighthouse was in Aries Inlet in Victoria. I've been there. We've all been there. We took all the boys there on our wonderful journey, and they went behind the fence and fell to their deaths. Dad. When I was in Sydney for a script conference, I was invited out to tea to meet Richard Moir, who was going to play the part of Dad. I was very nervous about the meeting. I had never met a film star before. He was very pleasant and normal and pretended not to notice when I got Moreton Bay bugs, cooked crabs, all over my face. Well, that's just silly. He made a wonderful father in the show and the kids thought he was great in real life. In the episode Without My Pants, the sad bones make Dad cry. Miss James thinks he is crying over the dead mouse and feels sorry for him. His dad with the mouse. I remember that. Oh, I can't wait for Without My Pants. All right. Nell. The part of Nell in Round the Twist was played by Bunny Brooke. Before each scene was shot, she used to walk around talking herself into the part. In one sad scene where she longed to see the ghosts of her relatives, she told me that she imagined it was really her mother haunting the lighthouse. Oh, buddy. She was very convincing in the scene. In the first drafts of the scripts, there was no character called Nell. See my script on page 32. I had an old man named Tom, but it was decided that there were too many males in the show, so Nell was created instead. Too much of a sausage party. Oh, young Nell. Extra bad. The Round the Twist episodes were the first scripts I had written. I needed help. The special script consultant and director was Esmond Storm. He had lots of good ideas and some bad ones. Of course he did. He thought that I should be an extra and feature in the episode called Birds Do. His idea was that I would be a patient in a hospital who had suffered a seizure while typing. I see. It was terrible. I couldn't go to the loo. I couldn't scratch. I sat there all day cooking in the bandages. And the picture is Esben Storm checks my pulse. He didn't want me to die before I'd finished the scripts. Esben Storm's got, like, peat hair in this picture. Look. Look at it. First effort. I want to write the scripts, was the first thing I said when I heard that my stories were going to be made into a television show. Then I started to panic. I didn't even know what a script looked like. I went straight out and borrowed one. Then I wrote a draft for an episode and gave it to Esben. He said it was very good for a first effort. Then he gave it back to me. Everything was crossed out. My heart sank. He had been right through it with a pen. If you look on the next page, you can see what it looked like. Oh, not everything's crossed out, you baby. No, you're right, mate. Mr. Gribble shows Dad, Linda, Bronson, Matron Gribble, and Gribble over the lighthouse. Tom follows along in a dejected manner. The combined kitchen, dining, and lounge room is on the ground floor with windows overlooking the ocean. And it's crossed out. There is a fridge, table, cupboards, etc. All isn't crossed out with a distinctly nautical feel. So instead it says, all nautical feel. Crossed out, the room is cluttered. Okay. Anyway, that's all very exciting. Romance. Oh, what's this? Pete loved Fiona. Linda had a crush on Hugh Townsend. Even Bronson got a... Oh, I won't read that. All right. Casting. I was tremendously excited when we reached the stage of casting. I was invited along. There were about 60 kids from all over Victoria who had come to the auditions at a huge empty studio. They were divided into small groups and given scripts to workshop. They had to tell jokes and stories and pretend to be dying, as you do. At one stage, they had to come out and tell the camera the biggest lie they had ever told their parents. Boy, there were some whoppers from Hungry Jack's. Most of the stories involved sneaking out to a disco and telling the parents they were somewhere else. A disco. Some said they had never told their parents a lie. Sure, mate. The first script they had to read was a scene out of the Cabbage Patch Fib where Pete puts a bit of spaghetti up his nose. Suddenly I felt very moved. I can't describe the feeling. All these people were doing strange things because of me. I had never heard people act my lines before. It was magic. It sent a shiver up my spine. Oh my. Draft horse. Esben Storm was a slave driver. I wrote 7 drafts of every script before he was happy. 91 drafts in all. Never in all my life have I worked so hard. By the time I finished, I had wasted away to nothing. And then there's a picture. Esben Storm and all that was left of me. And it's him holding a skull that I'm assuming is from Without My Pants. So, yeah, that works out because I'm pretty sure Paul Jennings played the ghost in that episode or something. We'll get there. What's this say? Tantrums. My favourite. People told me that script writers are not wanted on the set once shooting starts. They think that the writer might complain if the show doesn't turn out the way they wrote it. Script writers sometimes throw tantrum if their work is changed. It's no good being like this. The writer just has to accept that everyone concerned will want to be involved. The editor, the producer, the director, the television station, makeup, the art department, everyone has their own ideas. It's no use getting into a paddy. You what? If you don't get everything you want. If you can't compromise, you can't write scripts. It's not like writing books where it's mainly your editor giving you a bit of stick. In films, everyone has to have a say. I mean, Joel writes books and he doesn't have an editor, but he did have an agent. And before that, he was just sending his books out to publishers and they were all like, it's brilliant, but nobody wants to read that genre. Which is like, if it's that good, people will read it. Right? Just fucking do it, mate. Anyway, with so many people pulling their ideas, the show can be much improved. The last page of second copy has a joke about rabbits. It was the idea of Ralph Strasser, the film editor. I thought it was a great idea to put in the script. Well, we're not going to learn about that right now because, you know. All right, there's some pictures from the show. What else we got here? One-liners. Many of the actors made up lines that weren't in the script. How dare they? Sometimes we left them in. Frankie J. Holden was very quick with one-liners. In one scene, Mr. Gribble says to some Arabs, "You wouldn't give it to your mother-in-law." Frankie added his own line to mine. "Sorry," he said to the Arabs. "I should have said mothers-in-law." We left it in. Oh, there you go. Judith McGrath added something extra in a different way. Her wonderful range of facial expressions brought a new dimension to Matron Gribble. So I guess we've just found out that Frankie J. Holden was the racist guy in this, in Bird's Stew. There you go, everyone. Jeff, Josh, Jeremiah. We got him. Do you still want him on the podcast? I guess we could ask him about that, whether he still agrees with it. Special effects. How did they do that? Is the question I'm most often asked. People are especially keen to know how the cane toad was made to eat all the little frogs in Wonder Pants. Well, this might be the info that Sarah gave us. Of course, you're not allowed to feed frogs to a cane toad just for... Oh, by the way, this is in the episode that we've already recorded but probably won't be released yet. Enjoy. Of course, you are not allowed to feed frogs to a cane toad just for a movie. It would be cruel. You realise this is a TV show, not a movie, mate. Calm your shit. So, a small plastic frog was placed in the toad's mouth. I'm sure the toad loved that. The cane toad pulled it out. The film was run backwards and behold, the toad eats the frog. The little dragon in Bird's Stew was beautifully made out of rubber. Dry ice was pumped out of its nostrils to look like smoke. A puppeteer worked the dragon from under the bed. Yeah, they did. When it broke out of the egg, everyone was tense. The square eggs had been specially made, and Esmond only had two. If anything went wrong, like someone fluffing their lines during the take, who fluffed? There was only one spare. Once that was gone, there would be no chance of doing it again. Fortunately, everything worked. Congrats. Bronson! Every person in a book or TV show has to have a personality. What? I had to think up the sorts of things each person was likely to do and say before I wrote the scripts. I decided to make Bronson love food. He just wouldn't be able to walk past the fridge without opening the door. Me too, mate. I also made him into a bit of a wimp. He talked big, but always ran away from danger. Still, he has a lot of fun and everyone liked him. True dat, mate, true dat. And there's a picture of him just fucking enjoying the shit out of being on a staircase on the set. I know you can all see it. Don't lie to me. Oh, there's another bit of the italics. Oh, it's just a page. But we'll read this bit. Haunted places. How is it, someone asked me, that the kids in Round the Twist have so many supernatural things happen to them? Magic lipsticks, ghosts, dragons, bird poo bombings, sad bones, and tricky underpants. Are there haunted places? Well, I would have to be truthful and say that I have never seen a ghost. I can't believe this. On the other hand, I've been to places that have a certain feel about them because of their history. I recently visited the Tasmanian Shot Tower, where early transported convicts had to climb an enormous chimney and drop boiling lead down the inside to make ball-shaped bullets. Many of the workers died because of the terrible conditions. I felt so sad when I was there. I had to get out. The faces of those miserable men seemed to call for help from years gone by. Round the Twist is a sort of happy version of this. The lighthouse is haunted. The ghosts play music which calls to Pete, Linda and Bronson. Tony can hear it too. The kids are tuned into it and constantly try to catch the ghosts. As a result, they become embroiled in the supernatural adventures of the lighthouse and the sad history of the wrecks which lie beneath the waves of Victoria's shipwreck coast. The next story, Lucky Lips, features Pete in a bizarre encounter with a strange tube of lipstick. That's a cute illustration. This episode is based on the short story Lucky Lips. Whoa! From my book Unreal. The original story featured a mean boy who got his just desserts at the end. I wonder what's for sweets. I wanted Gribble the Bully to be the main character in the episode. Esmond Storm, script editor for the series, convinced me that it should be Pete. Nice kids do stupid things sometimes, he said. It should be about the hero. And so it is. Pete's just desserts are a little different to the boys in my original story. Yeah, we talked, that's what Sarah told us, and now I'm reading it. So, the circle of life. Anyway. All right, I'm going to read this Lucky Lips sort of script thing. Since we've recorded this episode and it'll be interesting. The lighthouse slumbered in the sun. Inside, however, Pete's room was gloomy. Pete lay half awake, looking at a poster of his favourite rock star, Zan. She sat, dressed in leather, on the seat of a motorbike. Her full lips were slightly parted. A sultry youth leaned against a wall and looked at her in a bored, assured manner. Pete's eyes closed. His imagination wandered. He was the one looking at Zan. She beckoned him with a crooked finger and pouting mouth. Pete sauntered over and bent down. "Kiss me."
"Kiss me,"
she whispered. Pete moistened his lips and bent down. Zan's arm pulled his head forward. "Pete!" came a loud shout. The daydream cracked and tinkled to the floor. "Daddy, this place smells like tinkle." Linda stood there grinning and brandishing a copy of Dolly magazine. "Did you buy this?" she said. "Sure," Pete said sarcastically. "Oh, I'm sorry," said Pete sarcastically. "I was just checking the latest shades of lipstick and eyeshadow." "That's funny," said Linda. "There's a letter to the agony column and someone's put a pencil mark next to it."
"So?"
"The letter's from someone in Port Noranda. Someone with the initials PT. Pete Twist." "There's probably millions of PTs in Port Noranda," said Pete lamely. Linda smelt victory. She started to read. "Dear Never Been Kissed, here is my advice. 1. Take it to a disco. 2. Dance wildly for the first hour. 3. Dance slow and close for the next hour. 4. Walk her home. 5. Look into her eyes and if they say yes, kiss." That's how many S's there are. Pete went red as Linda tossed the magazine onto the bed. "Good luck, Never Been Kissed." "Oh, that's a great movie. Let's watch that," said Linda. "It is. It says Never Been Kissed with the capital N, B, and K." So, I mean, she's obviously referring to the movie that's like, what, 9 years later than this. Anyway, "and if her name's Fiona, you're going to need it. She wouldn't even look at you." Pete gave a cocky grin. "Well, she's going to the disco with me. That must mean something." Music blared. Disco lights splashed the dancers' faces with colour. Pete couldn't believe his luck. Fiona, the most beautiful girl in the school, was dancing with him. And tonight, he was going to walk her home. He couldn't stop thinking about step 5. Look into her eyes, and if they say yes, kiss. He had the 5 steps written down on the back of his hand. On the back of his hand? So, like, she'd easily be able to see it. Pete was already well into step 2. He danced crazily, pumping his hands up and down like a wild thing. Fiona wore an amused smile as she tried to keep up. Over against the wall, Gribble and Rabbit watched the dancers. Gribble stared at Linda, who was dancing with Jill Henderson. "I think I'll do that twist Sheila a favour," smirked Gribble. He wandered out onto the dance floor.
"G'day, Despot," he said. "Wanna dance?"
"I'd have to be desperate to dance with you," snorted Linda. Tiger Gleason looked down from the DJ's booth. "Here's something with a bit more pace for all you rockers," he said. He turned down the lights and played a smooth, slow number. A fierce booze came up from the floor. Pete pulled Fiona towards him gently. Step 3.
It was working.
Gribble returned to Rabbit. "Changed my mind about the twist, Sheila," he said. Rabbit was watching Pete. "Why would Fiona come with a jerk like twist?" he said. Gribble watched jealously. "Felt sorry for him," he said. Then he added, "Twist has had it." Pete's big moment finally came. The disco was over. He walked with Fiona through the dark, lonely streets. Neither of them spoke. Pete was nervous. All he could think about was step 5. He'd never kissed a girl before. That's gonna change. He was so nervous that he didn't see Gribble, Rabbit and Tiger sneaking along behind. They ran from car to car and bush to bush. So just like their everyday hobby.
"This is it,"
said Tiger in an excited whisper. "He's wetting his lips." Fiona looked at Pete and smiled. "Thank you for a lovely..." "I'll walk you up to the door," Pete said nervously. Tiger dug Gribble in the ribs. "He's trying the old walker to the door tactic," he said. Gribble frowned. "They've reached the door," said Tiger. "He's limbering those lips, puckering in preparation." Rabbit punched his hands together gleefully. He's going to kiss her, Grips.
Shut up,
growled Gribble. Fiona opened the door. It was a great night, Pete, she said. Thanks.
Avocado! Thanks!
Pete closed his eyes and leaned gently forward. He pursed his moist lips and kissed the closed front door. Loud hooting and laughing split the darkness. The gang mocked mercilessly from the road.
Splinter Mouth!
Yelled Gribble.
Kissed off!
Shouted Rabbit. Give up, Twist, called Gribble. No one would kiss a maggot mouth like you. Well, I can see some similarities and differences. Pete hung his head. He blushed with shame.
Shame.
There was nothing he could say. I'm sure there was something he could have said. Pete felt miserable for days afterwards. He didn't want to be with anyone. On Sunday, he went to the local show all on his own. He didn't feel like going to the sideshows. He didn't look at the animals. He walked around the fairground, kicking stones and ignoring the laughing kids on the merry-go-rounds and rides. He wandered between the tents and trucks, not looking where he was going. Suddenly, he found himself in front of an old caravan. On the side was written, Madam Fortune, your problem is my problem. Well, that's different. There was a drawing of a hand with an eye in the middle of the palm. Typical. And sitting on the step was the most beautiful girl Pete had ever seen. Her smile was the promise of a gentle spring. It warmed him like the summer sun. Her teeth were as white as the winter snow. Her hair shone with the sheen of spider's webs on an autumn morning. All right, Jesus. Pete looked behind him. The smile was for him. She beckoned with a crooked finger and then, drawing a coloured shawl over her head, turned and walked into the caravan. Pete followed in a daze and peered into the shadowy silences where cobwebs joined hands. Weren't we just talking about spiders' webs? Jesus. At the far end of the van, a cooking pot shimmered with a silver liquid. Oh, it's black in the show. The figure in the shawl turned. Pete gasped. She had changed. The beautiful girl. You've changed. The beautiful girl was now a wrinkled old woman wearing garish red lipstick. She cackled like a monkey squealing in the treetops. I don't know. Fear grabbed Pete by the throat. The throat. I meant to say throat. I think I better be going, he stammered. I forgot to put the cat out. Madam Fortune pushed him down onto a velvet seat. Yeah, she did. Not yet, she chuckled. You haven't got what you want. What do I want? Madam Fortune puckered her wrinkled lips. A kiss, she said. Pete stood up. Thanks, but no thanks, he said. Not from me, you silly boy. From the girl of your dreams. Madam Fortune stirred the silver liquid. Pete's eyes were drawn to it. He couldn't look away. It shimmered and glimmered, and then a ghostly figure formed and stared at him as if from the bottom of a pool. Fiona, gasped Pete. How did you know about a kiss? Shrieked Madam Fortune. Oh, I'm sorry.
A kiss!
Shrieked Madam Fortune. A kiss from the girl of your dreams. She stirred the liquid again and the image faded.
In this bath, she said, I washed all the world's grubby longings. I know all. Never been kissed, she hooted. Never been kissed!
Pete hung his head again. He didn't need reminding. Madam Fortune put a gnarled hand into a string bag and drew out a small tube. What's that? Said Pete as she waved it under his nose.
Lipstick. Special lipstick. Invisible lipstick.
No way, said Pete. I'm not wearing lipstick. Madam Fortune gently pushed him back onto the chair.
It will make Fiona kiss you. It will make any girl kiss you. Just smear it on your lips when you're near a girl, and she won't be able to stop herself kissing you.
Pete shook his head.
Don't you want a kiss? Asked Madam Fortune.
She pointed to the silver liquid. An image formed. Pete saw himself at Fiona's door. He saw the door close in his face. He saw himself with his lips pressed against the cold glass. He shivered as the image faded.
You can run away from the past, said the old woman.
Sure can. You can either run from it or learn from it.
Ah, you see? What are you doing? Don't take the stick.
Anyway.
But you can't avoid the future.
She put the lipstick in Pete's hand. For nothing? Asked Pete.
For nothing. It's a loan. I'll come for it and get it back at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. Wherever the lipstick is, I'll find it. If you can't get a kiss by then, you miss out.
Pete took the lipstick doubtfully. It won't make the boys want to kiss me, will it? He said.
No, but it will work on any female.
Only once, though. You'll only get one kiss from each girl with this lipstick. Pete put it in his pocket. One kiss from Fiona, he said, will last forever.
Oh.
Bronson sat in his little lighthouse room and played with his computer. Well, that's different. Outside, the sun was setting across the sea. He looked up as Pete came into the room. You know that wonderful watch of yours, said Pete. Can you make it beep at exactly 5 p.m. on Tuesday? Bronson picked up the watch.
Yeah, why?
I have to do something by then, said Pete. Can you lend it to me? Bronson fiddled with the watch and handed it over.
$2,
he said, holding out his hand.
And I'll be at exactly 5 p.m.
Much later, Fiona and Linda jogged towards Fiona's house. They stopped outside the gate, puffing. Neither of them knew that Pete was hiding some distance away, doing a gribble crew. As Linda jogged off, he took out the lipstick and stared at it. Fiona, this is it, he said to himself. Tonight all my dreams come true. He wound the lipstick and smeared some of it over his lips. Then he ran across the road. Fiona had gone in. Pete pursed his lips. Fiona, he whispered. He knocked loudly on the door. Oh, I'm sorry.
Fiona,
he whispered. There was a sound of footsteps on the door. There was a sound of footsteps. And the door was thrown open. There stood Fiona's mother. Is Fiona home? Began Pete. He stopped. Fiona's mother was staring. Her lips were twitching. She trembled and then tottered forward, pulled by an unseen force. She threw her arms around Pete and lowered him in a wild embrace. Their lips met as Pete struggled ferociously. Fiona's father gaped from the door. The poor woman suddenly stopped kissing. She looked up. I'm sorry, she said. I don't know what got into it. Pete furiously wiped away the lipstick. He saw Fiona staring at him accusingly. Fiona's father charged out. Pete ran for it. Hey, come back here, yelled the enraged husband. He turned around to his wife. Is there something you want to tell me, dear? He said. Things weren't working out well for Pete, but he wasn't about to give up. The next day at school, the students all filed into a human development class. Twist kiss Fiona Richmond's mum, yelled Gribble. Desperate, said Rabbit. She must be at least 40 years old. No one else would kiss him. Pete was embarrassed. He tried to joke his way out of it. Women can't resist me, he said. Some of the girls groaned. Fiona hadn't come in yet. He tried to kiss Fiona and ended up kissing the doorknob, smirked Gribble. Yeah, added Rabbit. You'll see. I got animal magnetism, said Pete. He tapered off as Fiona came in and sat down across the aisle. She looked at Pete with a curious expression. Miss James came in and put her books down. Pete was desperate for a kiss from Fiona. If she kissed him in class, those fools would have to stop mocking him. Oh, yeah, I was right. He bent down under the desk and smeared on the lipstick. Fiona, said Miss James, would you take this note to Mr. Snapper, please? Fiona took the note and left the room. Pete looked up. Fiona, he said. His face fell as he saw her empty seat. It actually is spelt F-E-E space O-H space N-A-H. The nearest girl was Jill Henderson. She stared at Pete with wide open eyes. Her lips started to twitch. Her fingers trembled. With a look of horror, she threw herself onto Pete and kissed him passionately. Miss James was shocked. Jill, she said, what are you doing? Tiger grinned. He started to call the action. Twist has had a big breakthrough here, he yelled. Jill has jumped him. An epidemic swept through the room. All the girls started to twitch and stare. Suddenly, in one movement, they jumped out of their desks and scrambled for Pete. Like wild, uncaged animals, they shrieked and piled on top of him in a wriggling mass. They tore his clothes. They scratched and scrabbled for Pete, wrestling him to the floor. Each girl kissed him and then staggered away and slumped in her desk. They were stunned. Unbelieving. They didn't know what was happening. The boys stared in amazement. Girls are going crazy, yelled Tiger. They're twisted. All right, mate.
Okay, Paul.
Miss James clung to the edge of her desk. Girls, please, she yelled. Miss James doesn't like this, yelled Tiger. Pete struggled to his feet. His clothes were torn. He was cut and bruised. He looked up and saw Linda bearing down on him. No, he yelled. His own sister's going for it, shouted Tiger. Yes, his own sister is kissing him. Linda kissed Pete wildly and then leapt back and wiped her mouth. Miss James stared at Pete. Stared at Pete with wide open eyes. Her lips trembled. She clung to the edge of the desk. It was no good. The power of the lipstick was too strong. Her fingers slipped from the desk and she lunged forward. Miss James does like it, shrieked Tiger. She's going for it. Miss James is sucking face with Twist. Miss James kissed Pete long and wildly. Then she jumped back, shocked and upset. Pete furiously wiped his lips and looked up to see Fiona staring at him through the corridor window. She shook her head in puzzlement. Jill put her hand up to her throat and screamed, I kissed Pete Twist, she groaned. Did she scream or groan? Or did she scream and then say, and then groan? These are the questions of our lives. She rushed out of the room. All the other girls followed, wiping their mouths as if they had just eaten something awful. Talk about lucky, said Rabbit. Lucky lips, yelled Tiger. Everyone laughed, except Gribble. He was looking at the lipstick, which Pete still held in his hand. I want that lipstick, he said to himself. Yeah. The lipstick was spooky. Okay. So was the music that kept coming from Nell's room at the top of the lighthouse. No one could ever find out who was playing it. Later that night, Dad, Bronson, Pete and Linda stood outside the door at the top of the lighthouse. Dad opened it a fraction. The music grew louder. They burst through the door. Nothing. Silence. The music had stopped. The old clarinet, saxophone and violin lay there covered in dust. They looked at each other and shrugged. The mystery of the music had them stumped. Linda peered out of the window as Miss James's little Volkswagen pulled up at the foot of the lighthouse. Dad, look, said Linda. It's Miss James. You better make your move soon. She's a good catch. I'm not interested in her, said Dad. Not much, scoffed Linda as they walked down the spiral staircase. You blush every time we mention her name. Pete looked gloomy. He thought he knew why Miss James was coming. She danced with Mr. Snapper at the disco the other night, said Linda. Dad looked up sharply. He's too old for her, he snapped. He rushed down to the front door with a red face. Hello, said Dad as he opened the door. This is a pleasant surprise. We've had some complaints about Pete, said Miss James. Fiona's father says that Pete kissed his wife. No, said Pete, she kissed me. This morning he kissed every girl in the class. They kissed me, said Pete. He kissed Miss James too, added Linda. Dad was shocked. What? He gasped. What's going on here, Pete? Pete slowly pulled the lipstick out of his pocket. It's this stuff, he said. You put it on and the girls kiss you. Yuck, said Bronson. Who'd want a rotten old girl kissing them? Stay out of this, son, said Dad. He's after Fiona, said Linda. Dad took the lipstick from Pete. Pete didn't want to lose it. But Dad, he said, has to go back tomorrow. I think I'd better keep this, Dad said thoughtfully. To be on the safe side. He took Miss James' arm and led her outside. The kids trailed behind. Dad looked into Miss James' eyes earnestly. It's hard bringing them up on my own, he said. Pete's getting a bit wild. Sure, buddy.
He doesn't have a mother.
You don't think there's anything in this story about the lipstick, then? Something happened at school. Even Linda kissed him. Of course not, said Dad. Look, he smeared some of the lipstick on his lips. Oh, no, yelled Linda. She bolted into the lighthouse and shut the door. Miss James twitched. Her eyes stared. She tried to resist, but she was drawn forward by the power of the lipstick. She threw her arms around Dad and kissed him wildly. Dad just stood there with his arms hanging down limply. Then he took her in his arms, making the best of it. The kiss went on and on. It was a very long kiss indeed. Nell wandered by carrying a fishing rod. She shook her head. In my day, she grumbled, teachers taught reading and writing. Dad and Miss James sprung apart. Sorry, trembled Miss James. She stared at Dad with puzzled eyes. I didn't mean that. Didn't you? Said Dad. He sounded disappointed. Miss James turned and rushed off to her car. Dad stared at the lipstick with a devilish smile. He pushed it into the pocket of his overalls. What about my lipstick? Complained Pete. You've had your kiss. This is too powerful for children to handle, he said. I'll look after it. But Dad, protested Pete. He was wasting his breath. Dad was already walking off. That night, when everyone was asleep, Pete crept down the spiral staircase into the kitchen. Dad's overalls lay across a chair. Pete put his hand into the pocket and pulled out the lipstick. What a prick. The next morning, he left for school before Dad was up. This was his last chance to get a kiss from Fiona. Or so he thought. Poor Pete sat alone at the back of the class. All the girls shuffled away from him. Miss James spoke in a loud voice to get their attention. You've got the whole afternoon at the agricultural show, she said. Don't even look at a slideshow until you've answered all the questions on your sheet. I want you to pair up, one girl and one boy. I'm not going with Pete Twist, said Jill. Me neither, said Bessie. What's Bessie? Gribble grinned. No girl will ever go near Twist again, he leered. Not even his own sister, said Rabbit. I'll go with Pete, said a voice from the back. It was Fiona. Gribble frowned.
We'll follow him,
he said to Rabbit. Pete and Fiona didn't say much as they walked around the showground. Pete noticed that Madame Fortune's caravan was nowhere to be seen. They stopped at a booth where a pretty girl was selling kisses. Gribble, Rabbit, and Tiger were in the queue. I'm having 50 kisses, said Gribble. Rabbit's mouth fell open. That's $100, Gribbs, he said. Nah, said Gribble. After the first one, she'll be paying me. Gribble reached the front of the line. The girl took one look at him and turned over a sign with a smile. It said, closed. Fiona looked at Pete. It's not right, she said. Buying kisses. Kisses should be free. I wouldn't want to be kissed by someone who didn't really like me. That's different to what she said in the show. Pete hung his head. He felt ashamed. You're right, he said. Fiona, there's something I want to tell you. He took out the lipstick. Aww, there's a picture of a pig. Let's be hogs. And there's a picture of a pig. Gribble and Rabbit approached. Hand over that lipstick, said Gribble. If anyone's going to show Fiona how it works, it's going to be me. No way, yelped Pete. He turned and ran for it. The gang charged after him. Pete raced through the Dodgem cars and ducked behind a fairy floss stall. The gang pelted after him. Pete looked around for an escape. He darted between two tents and into the animal pavilion. The gang stuck to his tail. He couldn't shake them off. Rabbit leapt forward in a rugby tackle and brought Pete to the ground. Gribble and Tiger piled on top. Pete clutched the lipstick in his fingers. Gribble grabbed his wrist and tried to pull his arm down. The lipstick, like a loaded gun, came closer to Pete's face. Their hands quivered, and then slowly, Pete's arm collapsed. The lipstick smeared across his face and lips. Pete struggled out and looked around desperately. They were next to the pig pen. He jumped onto the railings and walked along between the pens. The gang followed. Pete looked down at the horrible pigs below. Excuse you. Very rude. Their green teeth slobbered with slime. Their teats swung like water-filled rubber gloves. Of course they did. A keeper yelled out in a loud voice, Hey, you kids, get out of there. The gang jumped down and ran off. Suddenly Pete slipped. He fell headlong into a stall with three enormous sows. He looked at their drooling faces and remembered Madame Fortune's words.
It works on any female, female, female.
The pigs charged over for their kiss. Later that afternoon, Gribble, Rabbit and Tiger hid behind a bush on the clifftop. They were waiting for someone.
Here he comes,
whispered Tiger. A dejected Pete trudged along the track. He was covered in pig dirt and his clothes were torn. He approached the bush, not knowing that it hid the waiting gang. He looked up, startled, as the gang jumped out. Rabbit thumped his hand into his palm.
Hand over that lipstick, he said, or you're a dead duck.
That's quacktastic.
If you don't, we'll rip your ears off, said Gribble.
Pulverize your brains, added Rabbit. The gang moved in. Pete tossed the lipstick over to them. You can have it, he said. I've learned my lesson. It's nothing but trouble. Don't give me that, sneered Gribble. He caught the lipstick. Girls, your luck has changed.
Gorgeous Gribble's coming for a kiss.
Give me a
Jeez. The three of them ran off along the cliff. They didn't stop until they reached the road. Look, Gribbs, said Rabbit. In the distance, a beautiful girl with a shawl around her shoulders walked towards them. You're under a winner there, Gribbs, said Tiger. She's beautiful. Gribble smeared on some of the lipstick. The girl put the shawl over her head and turned back the other way. The boys ran after her. They tapped her on the shoulder. Gribble puckered up for a kiss. The girl turned around. She had a gnarled face that carried the wrinkles of 1,000 years. Wow. It was Madame Fortune. The boys froze. Then they screamed. They turned and ran. Madame Fortune went after them. She shrieked and chuckled. The gang fled for their lives. Pete walked down to the beach and sat on a rock. He threw stones into the sea. He was miserable, ashamed, and lonely. At first he didn't even notice the quiet figure that approached. It was Fiona. She sat down next to him without saying anything. Pete looked at her. His heart thumped. He hoped she couldn't hear it. I'm sorry about your mum, Pete said at last. You won't believe this, but it wasn't me, it was the lipstick. Fiona smiled, a warm smile with the promise of spring, all right. I do believe you, she said. Linda told me all about it. Look, you idiot. You're never going to have trouble getting kisses. You don't need to steal them. Not you. And anyway, a stolen kiss isn't a kiss at all. She gently lifted up Pete's chin and kissed him tenderly on the lips. Pete's head filled with music. It was a long, gentle kiss, like winter and spring, autumn and summer, all rolled into one. That sounds dangerous. Suddenly, Bronson's watch beeped on Pete's wrist, but he didn't hear it, nor did he see the gang running for their lives on the cliffs above. The end. So, that'll do for today, I think. Hope you enjoyed my lovely storytelling, and perhaps we'll meet again some rainy day. If you have any complaints, fuck yeah, don't care. Yep, bye.
Time for a tale under the shade of the birch tree.